Welcome to the Thirsty Mage, the RPG podcast who appreciates whenever a video game based in a tropical climate decides to release in the dead of winter. Joining me is a man currently enjoying his own Canadian winter heat wave. It's Jordan Rudick.
Can't even call it the dead of winter anymore. Like, we had our cold snap, we had our snow, and that feels like it's in the rearview mirror now, because it's been like 10 or 12 degrees Celsius the last few days, and so yeah. we've had some rain, but it's been, yeah, unseasonably warm for, I mean, I say January, we're right into February here, so, you know, we're the light is at the end of the tunnel, literally.
Yeah, I almost don't like it, because I go out now, and it's like +3, +4 here, and the snow that was here is melting away. Like, there's still a sheet of it, so it's always there, but you get the feeling that it's like, oh, it's almost spring. And it's like, no, like, we still got 60 more days of just getting pounded with cold and snow. So I got to keep telling myself this isn't the spring.
So you still have my condolences until your actual literal spring arrives. Yes. In March. But yeah, I know for us, yeah. I feel like we're rounding that corner. Now we have had like kind of weird February snows on occasion. It's rare though, maybe every 7 or 10 years or something like that. And it doesn't seem like it's going to be one of those years. I think we're kind of pushing for the warmer temperatures, and geez, if we're already at, yeah, 10 to 12 degrees now and climbing, like, I think it's going to make for a hot summer. So
yeah,
we'll see what happens. And I don't like the super hot summers. I would be happy if it stayed kind of close to this, like 10 to 15 is a nice spot. Honestly, you put on a sweater, yeah. you can just wear shorts and stuff at that point. At least I don't mind it. So yeah, I'm happy if it sticks not too far from where we are now. The rain, it hasn't been like pouring rain, torrential, unless it's nighttime. It's been a little bit lighter during the day. The worst part is if I take my son to soccer, and then it's like a Thursday night, and it's just pounding rain. And like, then it's soccer, and they play on turf, so they're still gonna go. Yeah. And I'm just like standing there with my umbrella, like just kind of counting down the minutes till I can get back inside where it's dry, you know. But yeah, that's good.
Yeah, well, the one place that the weather has been absolutely perfect has been in I guess it's in Honolulu.
It's Honolulu,
I guess.
Yeah,
in Hawaii.
And that's, they've said it a couple times, I think. I've tried to notice like when they say like actual place names as opposed to the made up ones that they have.
Well, they mostly stick with, like, I always hear Hawaii. Yeah. And then every once in a while, they'll talk about like Honolulu, and I'm like, okay.
There was a Waikiki street, which I think is actually a street in like the Waikiki area of Honolulu. So I think some of the street names might be legit that you come across. And then you've encountered, or maybe you're getting close to the mall that's there, Anaconda Mall.
I've been in there, yeah, the Anaconda Mall,
which is the Ala Moana Mall in Honolulu.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's Ala Moana Anaconda. I'm like, oh, I laughed. I'm like, that's so good. But they're just constantly like twisting reality in these really funny, comical ways. And it's such a charming experience so far.
Yeah. Well, if you haven't guessed what game we're talking about and what we've been playing recently, it's Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth. So this is the direct sequel to the kind of path change, I guess, for the Like a Dragon franchise. So in the previous game, I guess it was the seventh iteration, I suppose.
Yeah, seventh, yeah, because of game. Yeah.
Yeah, we were introduced to Ichiban Kasuga. And now that kind of, you know, we've Kiryu still around. He's actually in this game, which we'll talk about, but as main protagonist go, we've switched over to Kasuga, and we also switched over to a turn-based style battle system, which is still a little bit weird, but I'm definitely enjoying it. And yeah, so this episode is kind of you know, the early ongoings. Both Jordan and I are, Jordan's a little bit ahead of me. I'm in the fourth chapter. I believe Jordan's in the fifth.
I just finished the fourth one last night. So I'm literally on the screen that says chapter 5, and I paused. I paused it. I'm like, okay, this was going to be our stop. We didn't want to go any further than this point. So I got to there, and I'm like, okay, put the controller down. And I was playing a little bit later last night than I intended. It was after 1 a.m, but I had to see the end of it through. And the way the chapters generally end is there's some kind of like what they would consider a dungeon, right? And there's a dungeon, and then you get, you know, usually some kind of a boss or battle gauntlet. You're doing a half a dozen or a dozen combat encounters, fight a boss, and then you get a big story drop, usually somewhere in that last like 30 minutes of the chapter ending, you get some kind of revelation or some kind of big plot movement, which makes sense. Like it's a good balance between the combat, which I think is excellent. It's an improvement on the original, more on that later. And then the way the story is told a little bit more in shorter cutscenes compared to other Yakuza games. Like, yes, something that turned me off of some of these games. Like, you think, remember even when we were playing Yakuza 0, like some of those cutscenes are super long, like 5, yeah, 10, 15 minutes, it feels like. And just to have them so often was very kind of jarring. You know, you wanted to get back to the exploration of the combat stuff.
Same with Judgment. Like you could get a good 20-minute cutscene in Judgment, you know?
Yeah, they hadn't really figured out the sweet spot of like, you know, how to dole out combat like kind of at a steady clip and then interject, you know, a 5-minute cutscene or a little bit of dialogue. What's really nice is a lot of the dialogue you can kind of read, you can skip through, but like you can fast forward it, right? Like you can read it, and even if the characters are talking, you can push A or whatever button to advance it. And I like that because I read pretty fast and I don't need to hear all of it. And then they have there's fewer of the kind of cutscenes that you don't really skip, right? That where there's no button, you'd either skip the whole thing or watch the whole thing, right? There's fewer of those kind of, I guess, pre-rendered or something like that. They're a little bit better animated, those ones, obviously, because they're not kind of in-game necessarily. But yeah, I'm really digging the way they've adapted and even pushed this game to different limits and boundaries compared to the previous Like a Dragon game.
Yeah, so no worries about spoilers. We're not far enough into the game to spoil anything, but we will be talking about the first few hours, which we played through now. Mm-hmm. And I guess to set the scene a little bit, we'll just set up how we're playing, because I know, so I'm playing on the PS5, and sorry, Rich, but I'm playing with the English voice acting. I'm sorry.
that's two for two on disappointing Rich on this podcast, I think.
But yeah, I think
I am going to switch back. I'm going to switch to Japanese about halfway through because I want the comparison. I like that idea. But yeah, I definitely started English too.
So did you end up getting an Xbox version?
Here's my story. So this is good. So I had a PS5 copy pre-ordered at GameStop, but it was a GameStop that's not where I live. Like it's a couple towns over. It's where my in-laws are, so we go there for dinner on Sundays. I pre-ordered it there, kind of I stopped there a month or two ago before dinner and just did the pre-order, which is fine. And I don't mind, you know, driving out there's about 25-30 minute drive, not super far. But the whole time I'm thinking, okay, like, yeah, I can go get this PS5 copy, but I kind of wanted to play Xbox. I wanted to play on Xbox because I just feel like I'm in this ecosystem right now. I'm getting the, you know, the gamer score and the achievements there. I'm collecting these Microsoft reward points and cashing them in for gift certificates or gift cards, like Xbox gift cards and stuff. So I was like, okay, like I'm just kind of cozy, wintertime cozy in my recliner in my office where my Series X is set up. So I was like, okay, I've decided I'm going to play here. But I had a couple other pre-orders at my local GameStop, which is closer to my place. So I went there, I'm like, okay, I'll just cancel one of my other pre-orders and move that credit over to Like a Dragon and just get the physical Xbox version. I won't have to pay any extra money for that because I already had fully paid off pre-orders. I go to my local GameStop and I ask them, okay, hey, I've got a pre-order. I want to switch it to Like a Dragon, Infinite Wealth. Do you guys have any Xbox copies left? And he said, no, dude, we literally got, they got one physical copy for Xbox. And that went to a pre-order. So that was already gone. But they had PS5 ones, but I was like, no, I've kind of committed to playing on Xbox. One physical copy. I called the GameStop a little bit further away from my place that I already had the pre-order for like Infinite Wealth at, and they said they didn't get any physical Xbox copies. So I got to call Phil Spencer here and figure out what's going on with the... Have they really abandoned the physical ship here? Are we not getting any more discs for Xbox? Like, I mean, we know... The next Series X, I think we know this, the next Series X version Pro or just a slight upgrade, there's no disk drive, right? There's no, it's digital only, and the Series S is digital only. So this could be the death knell, or maybe we're seeing in real time the death of physical Xbox games, right? Like we're closer to that than ever before, I guess.
Yeah, that's wild to me. Like, yeah, I don't know. It seems weird because like with these now, like with Rebirth is a month away or not even, well, no, I guess it is a month away. Rebirth's a month away. Yeah, and that's going to be on two, it's going to be on two Blu-rays. Like that, yeah, that
exactly.
Like we're probably looking at, you know, 500 meg or 500 gigabytes or 300 or 400 or something crazy.
If you're downloading it, yeah. Or maybe even the install, God knows, right? Like
it could be days for some people to download that. Like, I, you know, back before I had decent internet, I remember, what game? I think it was Cyberpunk. Hmm. It took 4 days to download
Cyberpunk. I remember that. I remember you telling us about that. Yeah. That's crazy, right? I, the funny thing is, what you have Rebirth using two discs as a selling point, and then you, on the flip side, you have no Series S/X copies, physical ones of Infinite Wealth for me to buy. So it's like, what, you know, let's pick a lane here, guys. Like, is physical done, or you, what about your limited editions, your you know, your day one things? Like, it seems like, I don't know, I don't want physical to go away. Obviously, you know, you and I are in lockstep. You're meanwhile buying this huge collection of NES and Game Boy games and things like that. Like, there's clearly, yeah, you know, a retro market that's thriving in the Lloyd household. But just, yeah, it's sad to see, like, physical media kind of literally dying out in some ways. So there was images on social media about Best Buy kind of clearing out their physical video game sections, right? Like, just getting rid of them entirely.
Yeah.
And I guess replacing that with other stuff, like probably tech demos for phones and watches and stuff. But yeah, it's a shame. I'm sad to see it go.
Yeah.
At any rate, so to end the story, I did end up downloading the digital version on Xbox, just the regular standard version. It was $89.99 Canadian. I had a $10 gift card, Xbox gift card, that I got from redeeming rewards points. So I kind of earned those points over the last little while, and I guess I had some from before. I earned some points for buying the game. I was happy about that, and then I got like a $75 gift card for the rest on at Costco online, and that was only $68. So I saved another $7 there. So I got almost like $22 off of my purchase just through kind of gift card deals. So that's not too bad, right?
Yeah, no, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I don't mind going digital if I can get, like, you know, 10-20% off the price through some kind of promotion or rewards or something. So yeah, so that was okay. So I ended up on Xbox.
I would say, like, if you had to go digital, Xbox isn't the worst, because they seem to be the one that's embracing backwards compatibility the most. So you would think, you know, in the long run, potentially, if there is a new system, it'd be safe enough to assume that, you know, you should get
a safer on Xbox 10 years-ish
for, you know, so that it's not just, you know, one day the shop is gone and your purchase was a 10-year lease or something, you know.
And it's kind of built in, right? Like, if you're embracing digital, then you, in a way, you are embracing backwards compatibility, right? And we know they've made efforts and strides towards that goal for some time, you know, whether it's bringing original Xbox games, 360, Xbox One games that are still playable today. Yeah. On your Series S and X, like that is commendable. And yeah, I'd be less worried about having a digital game on Xbox be unplayable in a decade than PlayStation or Nintendo, right? Those ones I'm a little more skeptical. Nintendo, because of their ineptitude when it comes to online services.
Well, and Sony down now. It's like, if it's not Switch, it's like just going down the toilet.
Exactly, right? It feels that way. Yeah. And then you've got Sony, on the other hand, who they're just kind of a little more cutthroat, it feels like. They'd rather have you buy things again. Or, you know, you had Jim Ryan making comments about people not playing old, who plays old games, you know, like, it's, yeah, you know, a lot of us, even if, like, the maybe the money or the dollars don't bear that out. I think there's a very, you know, vocal minority to, you know, maybe middle group that does like to have access to all our games. So, and yeah, then there's preservation, right? Like, we have to think about, like, just games, you know, going away forever. Like, that idea just sucks. And so I'm more inclined. I want to support companies that are a little bit more in favor of finding ways to keep things alive. But yeah, getting rid of the physical media, I don't know, not in favor.
Nope.
Yeah. Where do we want to start? Like, this game is awesome. I think, yeah, first impressions, like, because I played, you didn't finish like a dragon the first one,
no,
did you?
Yeah, no, right? No. I couldn't even tell you how far I got in. I know,
yeah,
I,
you dabbled, put a good, I think.
Yeah, I put a good chunk in, because, okay, like, I know that the intro to the, like, a dragon number 7, I think, was pretty, like, there's a good chunk of it, because I remember there was like a few hours at the beginning when that was kind of like back in time when he was in his 20s.
That's right. A lot of story. You know, you had to figure out who Ichiban was, right? There was all that build up to kind of the identity of the character, what, you know, that he had been in prison before. So you got to get all that background to kind of start this new saga.
Yeah. And if memory serves me correctly, in the first game, he like took the fall for his boss.
That's right.
So he kind of did the life sentence for his boss. And so that's why he was in jail for 18 years. And then when he got out, he wasn't welcome. I don't remember, there's details, but his boss dies or whatever, and he wasn't welcome back. And so he ended up living on the street. And so I went through all that. And then at some point, that's when I fell off, was he was kind of getting his life back together. But I remember like playing all the, like a bunch of the games and, you know, going around the city and that sort of thing. So this game, so the new one starts off, you're still in, you start off in Japan. You were there a little bit longer than I would have expected. I think you were in Japan for like 2 or 3 hours or so of the game, where you're like, and I was reluctant to do a whole lot of exploring, because I don't like, I'm thinking at some point, none of this is going to matter, because I'm going to be in Hawaii the rest of the game. So I'm not really going to spend, like, I'm trying to hustle through it or whatever. And they kind of reintroduce some of the characters from the first game, because I recognize faces and stuff. So it was kind of neat to have kind of the setup.
I love those guys. I love that party. I think the four of them are really, really fun together. They're all like, even battling with them a little bit, I'm reminded, like, I like their abilities too. I think I might even like their abilities better than the ones I have now. Like I loved Nanba's, like his ability to just spit out fire. Like it was it's such a strong attack. And even, I'm forgetting the bodyguard or the security guard's attacks, but he's got some good ones too. And I just kind of remember falling pretty hard for that group. They work very well together. There's a lot of chemistry there. And then I wasn't expecting all the stuff around the relationship between Sachan and Ichiban. Like that was really funny. Like it's a very funny opening hour to the game, which is kind of again, just totally unexpected. I'm like, oh, you know, we're going to get to Hawaii in like the first 30 minutes, the first hour. And you're like, no, we got to deal with Ichiban's love life before we go. Like, it was just odd and kind of a nice surprise, I guess.
Well, and it was funny too, because like they had him being very awkward and everything. And then when you think of like, he's in his 40s. So it was kind of funny to see like how awkward he was socially. And then seeing, it's funny because you see, like, he's kind of got his life in order. He's got a nice job. He's helping the community. You know, people seem to like him. He's the hero of Yokohama. Hmm. And then social media does him in. And
of course.
There's no way. Like, it's funny because now that we're in Hawaii, that whole kind of storyline is kind of on the back burner, I guess. But there's no, like, it's gotta come back up at some point, the Tataru channel or whatever.
There's a couple hints at it, obviously, like it is very much like a secondary thing compared to the main objective of his in Hawaii, which funny enough is the main objective of many of the characters you meet in Hawaii. They're all looking for this one person, right? So that's kind of fun.
Yes, and I think it's a good premise, like to have, you know, he's going to Hawaii to meet his mother, like he didn't know she was still alive, so to have him go back there, and then to find out that, you know, Kiryu's in Hawaii and he's looking for her, and all these shady characters are looking for her, and then I was totally like not expecting the initial, like, you know, when you get to Hawaii, there's some funny stuff that happens when he first gets there.
Yes.
But eventually, like, he pretty quickly gets to his mother's house and meets a woman who claims to be the maid or whatever. And I was surprised. I'm like, wow, we really got here quickly. And then all of a sudden, things turned out bad for Kasuga, and I was not expecting. I knew there was that scene where he wakes up on the beach naked.
Yeah, we were just waiting for that to happen, right? Like, when is he going to have this embarrassing moment, and what is that going to lead to? What part of the game is that? You figure like it's going to be pretty early, but I wasn't sure when that was going to take place. And it's gosh, I I'm starting to, the party is starting to grow on me. The characters that we're meeting are starting to grow. I didn't like them as much at first. I loved the guy that he was pushing around in the wheelchair when you first get to Hawaii, right? Like they're fast friends, and he's just such a nice, genuine guy. Like you can see him being friends with anybody, right? Like from helping him on the airplane when he first arrives, and then you meet him again, and he's literally in a hotel room. That I guess the two of you are in a hotel room or something like that, and he's like getting shot at by these mafia guys, and it's like you look at the life that you've dragged this poor man into. You know, it's, but I mean, that's Ichiban, like kind of trouble. No matter how happy go lucky he is, trouble seems to follow him wherever he goes, right?
Yeah. And then it's funny too. So when he first gets to Hawaii, he's actually warned about the fake cabs, and he somehow ends up in one.
He still ends up in one.
And so when he first gets to Hawaii, there's a character that a taxi cab driver basically like holds him up. You know, points a gun at him, and Ichiban is able to turn it around on the taxi driver. Like he gets the gun out of his hand. And but unfortunately for Ichiban, the there's like cops walking by, and the cab driver's like starting to say that he's being attacked or whatever, and because Ichiban's a tourist, the police immediately think it's he's up to no good. And then it's funny,
and he
to
can't have speak that the language, right? Like he's also like his English isn't good, so he can't defend himself.
We probably would have known that better if we weren't listening to the English subtitles, right, or the English voice acting.
Yes, exactly.
So that's one of the bad things about that. But it's funny that to have that contrast of like, so he gets into trouble with, the social media and being recorded or whatever in Japan. But then when he gets to Hawaii, it ends up saving him because the guy in the wheelchair was recording the altercation. Just happened to be at the right place at the right time. I'm sure that is going to come back at some point.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. And so he gets out of that, but then, he ends up, on the beach naked, and then he gets arrested. And then the police in this game are not depicted in a nice light. Let me just
no, it's a stark contrast with the police in Japan, right? Like in the other Yakuza games in Japan, like the police, like aside from maybe like the captain of the police who might be a little gruff, but like the detectives and other people you meet, they're generally either helpful or they work together with you. Like they'll be like better for the better good kind of partnerships. Like let's bring down the Yakuza together. But this one, there's not really any like sugarcoating it. They're pretty bad dudes, and they're corrupt, all, and it's pretty heavy handed.
I haven't met one that wasn't corrupt yet.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So the first cop he meets that arrests him while he's being naked for an indecent exposure basically tells Ichiban that he's going to be blaming him for several unsolved crimes and going away for a long time. So Ichiban panics and runs, attacks the officer and runs out of the precinct, manages to get away in handcuffs, and that's how we're introduced to Kiryu, because Kiryu just happens to be in the vicinity and sees him and helps him get out of the cuffs or whatever. And and then they end up helping each other, like Kiryu ends up helping him, and then during conversations they realize that they're actually have the same objective. Kiryu
was
sent there by the government to find a woman, and Ichiban mentions he's looking for his mother, and they both end up finding out that it's the same woman. So it's
this is where you get a little bit more of that connection between Like a Dragon, Gaiden, the man who erased his name, with that side story I was talking about on the Xbox episode, the stars Kiryu playing an undercover agent, I suppose, Joryu.
Yeah,
you get that connection of like, okay, you see like the agency that he's working with, and Kiryu refers to them frequently, like, oh, these are the guys that kind of fund the operation here. Like I have to report back to them. Like it's a mission kind of given to him by them, right? So he's kind of following their lead, and so they keep coming up a bunch of times. So you see those threads kind of connecting between Infinite Wealth and that spin-off game, the Like a Dragon Gaiden. So it's cool. Like I love kind of seeing all the pieces come together. obviously you have the references back to the first Like a Dragon game in the first chapter and a half of Infinite Wealth. So they're doing a good job, I think, of at least at the beginning here, kind of spinning this tale that brings in all that's kind of come before. And so if you are rewarded for having played these games, I think I'm getting that sense. Kiryu is great in the game, obviously, you know, super tough, super cool. I kind of like his new style, the short kind of gray hair, the graying hair, like he's getting older and everything, right? But he's still very badass. Stylish. Oh yeah, like, no, he's got his, you know, his nice pants and his belt and his shirt, but yeah, yeah. Still beating everyone into the ground, you know. He's so powerful. Like, I love in the combat. We should talk about the combat because it's really good. You can switch between his different fighting stances. Like Brawler, I don't remember the other two because I always use Brawler.
I don't remember the names, but I just know that one, like, so when the turn comes up, you can basically use the D-pad to pick between, like, there's a speed-based one where you're attacking multiple enemies, yep, but you're, yep, but not as strong, and then there's a balanced attack. Yeah. And then the Brawler, I think the Brawler one is, like, his stance is funny because he has his arms, like, down by his waist, like he's, you know, raging or whatever. So he's leaves himself open for attack, but mm-hmm. when he attacks, then they're more powerful.
There's like so much damage. It might even be called Beast, the one where you're like throwing the enemies.
Oh, yes,
there's one where you pick them up and you spin them around and you press Y. It does more damage than any of the attacks. Even it does more damage than some of the special attacks. Like, it's so strong. Yeah. And if you throw the enemy into another one, you're just doing tons of damage. Like, I've been putting a lot of like offensive stuff on him, trying to buff his attack, because he's definitely putting out the most damage of anyone on the team for me so far.
Well, and that throwing attack breaks guards too. So there's there's a lot of enemies that have a pizza for a shield and like a Coke bottle as like a kind of a knifey sword sort of thing. So they're kind of hard to defeat, and like you have to break the guard, and Kiryu's got the attack that does that. So
yeah, that's right. Like I like all the new attacks that you like. Every couple levels you get a new attack, which is fun. Like I feel like even I'm only around level 14 or 15, but every character has like 7 attacks. Like it's pretty neat how fast you seem to get new abilities. And we haven't come to the part where you're switching job classes, which I think is going to happen soonish, right? Like, the game's going to probably open up a little bit in maybe the fifth or sixth chapter, and you'll get the chance to explore and try different job classes. But right now you're just leveling up the standard job classes that you came with, but getting a lot of abilities, and they're all pretty useful. Like, I feel like I'm kind of always flicking through the different abilities to see which one I want to use, which one has more of an area of effect attack, which one does a specific elemental type that might be strong against whatever opponents you're facing. And there's a good variety of enemies, I think, so far in this game too. Like, I feel like I'm not fighting the same dudes over and over and over again. Like, maybe in the streets you are, but when you get to like the dungeon segments, you're being kind of given different opponents pretty regularly, like or new guys, like new, not just like new color schemes, but they'll have like a different weapon or something like that, or a different pattern or whatever. So I'm liking how the game is going to asking you to experiment with the character's abilities a bit more to deal with the different dudes that you come against.
Yeah, well, that's it. And the variety in your party, I've really appreciated, because they really stick to kind of that class system of, you know, Kiryu uses his bat as his attack.
Asuka.
Yeah, so he has this nice, it's kind of a balanced approach, because I realized that he has, Ichiban has the only healing, the only way to heal the party. So
that's right.
I've kind of used him as like kind of a initial attacker, but also the healing, or the white mage, I guess, to a certain degree.
Yeah, it's a strong heal, right? Like it's an area of effect. It heals you for like more than everybody. Half your health too. It's great.
Yep. Yeah. So I've used that, and then the Kiryu is like my all out attack. Like I just send him in, like send him bull in a china shop, just send him in. Mm-hmm. And then Tomazawa is more like, so he's got more MP, so I usually let him sit in the back and just like do the electrical, like that battery shock,
that's a good one
attack. Yeah. it's just funny to watch it too, because mm-hmm. he puts his car battery on the ground, and then Kind of shoots the electricity out of this car battery at opponents.
Like, yeah, it's a hilarious animation for
the
sure.
The animations in this game are incredible. Like, they're just hilarious.
I think one of the things that's really been standing out to me, and I think this is an improvement over the first game, like you have like this kind of circle radius around your character where you can move about, and like it helps you if you can get closer to an enemy, you get a proximity bonus. You'll do more damage if you start just a basic attack closer to them, right? But there's also like a lot of other little things at play. Like you can hit them into walls to do extra damage. You can hit enemies into each other to do extra damage. You'll do more damage to the second guy. You can even hit enemies into your partners and then they'll do an attack, right? So that you kind of bounce them off of like one of your other party members and you're doing tons of damage. Like the combat's really fun. Like it's just so dynamic and you constantly have to be thinking about which direction your attacks are doing or going in or which ability to use, whose turn might be next or something. Like all of it kind of works really, really well together, and I think they've managed to find a way to incorporate some of the kind of brawler elements of the early Yakuza games with the kind of looser turn-based style of these Like a Dragon games.
Yeah, well, it's almost, there's a very tactics feel to, like, it's not just like a flat turn-based, like, oh, you know, I choose attack or I choose a skill. Like there is a lot of tactics elements to it where like there's a certain area that you're allowed to walk in, so like you said, you kind of have to position the character where maybe you knock the character into something or the weapons you pick up. There's been a few funny things, like I was there's this fight in a bar and you can pick up kegs and hit people with
them.
Yes,
that's right.
But then it freezes the character because it's obviously the kegs are cold.
Right. You give them a cold, or so they catch a cold. They catch one of the status effects.
And they're debuffed. Like,
yeah,
just like such small detail that's just hilarious. Like, it's just great.
The environments, like, they have so many things that can break or be used, right? Like every environment feels like a different battle too. Like, yes, you might be fighting different or the same opponents, but if you're in a different space, it's going to unfold differently, right? So yeah, there might be a chair beside you can pick up and smash a guy. You might pick up like a little, like a cue ball at a pool table or some kind of little object and you throw it at them. And it might have some kind of elemental effect. Every kind of scene that you're participating in feels fun and different. And what I really love, the battles are fast. Like they don't take a long time for, I think that's one of the complaints that people have about turn-based battles, is they take too long. Right, that there's too much time between like character moves and thinking, but this one, like with the characters kind of, you know, enemies and your party kind of running around the environment, everyone's kind of floating around and bobbing and weaving. Like there's a lot of just motion to it, you know, everyone's kind of moving around all the time, and then the animations are hilarious. I'm sure you've encountered the summon characters you can get, the pound mates.
Mates. Yeah, it's so awesome. Hilarious. I can't afford them though. They're so expensive.
They're expensive. Yeah, I took one into this dungeon that I just completed because I was worried they were going to be pretty tough. So one of the first ones you get, it's a hilarious little side quest that you do first. You think you're finding this girl, Chitose, right? Yeah. And so you call this hotline, and you're not sure if it's going to be like a prostitute or what. I guess that's what it looks like, right?
They thought it was an escort.
Thought it was an escort, right? Because the guy on the street who gave him the flyer, he's like kind of hinting that way. And then you call them, and it turns out to be Poundmates, which is this service where in battle you can phone a friend. You summon a character to join your team temporarily and fight for you, and they're super powerful. It costs a lot of money to summon them, like it's not free. So it's definitely one of those like in a last resort type things. But the Chitose that you meet, it's this big black woman, and she looks she has a name that relates to not Buster Douglas, some kind of boxer, right? She looks like this giant huge boxer. But and I think the male version was in the first Like a Dragon game. So now I don't know if it's his daughter or wife or something like that, but to see like that throwback to the earlier game, and she's super strong. Like she's got these big, huge boxing gloves and she's doing like a spinning lariat into the enemies, like just taking them all out. Like it's awesome to be able to summon someone like that if you need the help, right? And you can afford it.
Yeah.
And then you get more of the Poundmates characters to summon as you complete side quests. So you might do one of the mini games and you do that side quest, and then one of the characters involved in the mini game, he'll become a Poundmates summon for you. And there's even a thing like where if you summon them more, I think they become more powerful or something like that. If you get them to like this next level, They might do, maybe they stay longer, do more damage or something like that. So again, just another layer to the combat, these hilarious summon attacks that you can do.
Yeah, and like I said, the amount of money, like, it's, I know, well, the first one is free.
First one's free to try it out, yeah.
Yeah, to show you, but then, yeah, I was looking at, it was like $300, and I'm looking at my, what I have, and I had like 202, and I'm like,
yeah, kind of, I can't even afford this.
I'm not earning the money fast enough for this, mm-hmm. I guess. It's insane.
Well, true to escort form, it's not cheap, right? Like you gotta have deep pockets, I guess. But
yeah, well, and yeah, it's funny too, I just discovered the ATM, and
yes, because that's right.
The way that it works in combat is if Ichiban is knocked out, that's like the fight's over. So mm-hmm. it's you have to keep him active the whole time. The other characters can be knocked out, just not Ichiban. And if you're knocked out, you lose money. Like,
yeah,
I don't know if it's a percent thing or what, but it usually, like, there was a couple times I died, and they're like $30 or $40 they took out of my mm-hmm. out of my pockets, I guess. And then, yeah, I was walking by this ATM, and I was walking by it initially because I'm like, I wonder if I can rob this thing because I need some money. Yes. And it's like, no, that didn't work. But
hey, it's not Yakuza anymore, David. You're not a thief. Yeah. You're not a bad guy.
Yeah, but it told me that you know, you could deposit the money so that if you are knocked out, then you know that money is safe. So,
yeah, and which is like, another throwback interesting to Dragon Quest, right? Like detail, that's a total Dragon Quest, like the bank, like putting your money in the bank so you don't lose it. You know,
yeah.
Speaking of Dragon Quest, like there's a lot of great kind of callbacks to older games too. Like in addition to like the Sega games that you can find in the arcades, like Virtua Fighter and some of the racing games and stuff like that, the claw machines you can do. What my favorite sound effect, and I was just beaming when I heard this, when a new character joins your party, like when Kiryu joins or Tomozawa joins your party, there's a little jingle that plays. And okay. It's reminiscent of like the Dragon Quest jingle that plays when a character, and I just love them so much for doing this. Like there's so many little touches to this game that are references to other RPGs or other Sega games. Like there's just so much love and attention put into this game. Clearly, like the people making this, I imagine they just had a blast doing it. Even the introduction, like I'm sure you kind of felt like the Persona 5 kind of vibes of the introduction, right? Like all the color and the kind of just the style, the panache, it felt really artsy. Like it reminded me so much of the beginning of Persona 5, like just the cutscenes and all the presentation of it. Like the people making this game, they've got confidence, man. Like there's a flair and a kind of flair for the dramatic even that this game has that I'm really, really digging.
I can't believe how much Pokemon stuff there is in this game because it's like the entire game. Like there's a whole sub game called like Suji. I think it's Sujimon, where it's basically like when you defeat the enemies in the game, then you can bribe them with gifts to join your party in this underground like fighting thing, where it's like so the you know enemies in the game become almost like Pokemon in this tournament where you put three of them, you know, you put three of them in this ring against three other people, but you're commanding what they do.
Yeah.
And they're like, I don't know. At first I was thinking it was like some kind of digital thing or no. It's like, no, it's just humans. They're just people. Just go.
That's right.
Like,
you know, the people are your literal Pokemon here.
Yeah. So you got this whole thing and it's all based on like, there's like the Elite Four and there's this like professor who's convincing you to become the tournament champion or whatever. Mm-hmm, so it's all very like Gen 1 or whatever. And then the last thing I did before recording was I played a version of Pokemon Snap.
Oh, yes. Yes, that's right.
Where you sit on a trolley and you're going through Honolulu and it's so weird because it goes like you're supposed to take pictures of sickos and it's all these like ripped guys. Very muscular guys that are wearing like butterfly masks and they're like popping out from behind bushes and they're like hanging from street poles and stuff. You're supposed to take pictures of them so that the police can round them up.
I love it.
And they're just like, what is going on? But it's totally Pokemon Snap.
I mean, it's so there are entire games inside this game, right? Like the mini games and the side quests, the activities, like the dating stuff, like all the friends you can make in the game just by you do the hang loose sign to make friends with people on the street. Like, it's just, I'm just constantly, I'm just flashing it all the time. And then all the random people just turn around and give you the hang loose back. Aloha. Yeah. It's just so cute and so just
crazy
brimming.
Delivery.
The pizza delivery on the bike, it's like crazy yeah. taxi. Like, there's just so much life in this game. Like, it is amazingly full. And like, I've liked this whole series for just how much there is to do. And this seems to top them all, like, without question. Like, the depth to the activities is what's crazy, right?
Then the dating app that's supposed to give him the experience so that when he goes back to Japan, he'll be he won't be so right. awkward around Saicha.
Yeah, yeah.
But then it was such a weird, because it's like, I don't even know how to describe it. It's like, basically, I couldn't even find it. Like, it wasn't on my phone or anything, because I was like, wait, I haven't done this in a while. Should I be like keeping tabs
on the woman,
this?
Right? You have to go back to that.
So
that
I'm gonna have to
mask finder.
I can't remember where she was, but
I wanted to do it again too, just before the podcast, to remember like what is this actually about. I remember you have to type in the press a button sequence as fast as you can so that you get extra points or whatever.
You have to pick the response that you think that the person you're talking to would want to hear. There's a little social aspect to it. But then, there's like a mini game of it goes into like speed mode where it's like you have to
do as many as you can in a minute or something.
Yeah, so that you have to hit the button combinations that come up so that
that's right.
So you'd be hitting like circle, square, cross or whatever. And then if you get the right combo, then these messages are going up. And then it ends with the first one ends with your thing, you're going to meet this woman, but then it ends up like she hired some guy to meet you instead.
Exactly.
Just to brush it off, whatever.
Catfish or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, like typical, like 2024 social media kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I imagine we've only scratched the surface of all the kind of side activities that you can do this game. Like, Infinite Wealth is more like infinite mini games. Like, there are so many things to do here. And I love those distractions. At some point, I want to get back to the main story, and especially with Final Fantasy upcoming. And I do want to dabble in Persona 3 Reload, I think, before Final Fantasy. So February is going to be just a busy month of like these top tier RPG experiences. We're so spoiled early on this year. You know, like, I can't remember a time where we had three within a month of each other that are all like, we're talking probably 90%. Metacritic games here, right? All three of them I could see. I think the first two already have, like, Infinite Wealth and Persona, I think, are hovering around 90. Is there any chance Rebirth is not 90 plus? Like, I think it's zero. Freak. Like,
it
come
looks
on.
It looks incredible. So
they're doing, I just saw they announced that they're doing like another direct on the game next week. Like, there's gonna be a literal Rebirth focused Sony direct kind of thing. I'm like, okay, well, they're obviously probably a demo coming for this game. I can't wait. But Infinite Wealth has been a treat. Just constantly getting new things. It just put a smile on your face. Like, Ichiban is so funny. We were talking about, just before we started recording, about just the dialogue that plays as you're walking around. Like, just kind of dialogue between the characters. Like, they're just having conversations to build up their relationships. And those are really funny, too.
I was telling Jordan before, I was laughing out loud at the Tomozawa and Ichiban were having a discussion about why it was called Genesis in the West when it was already called Mega Drive in Japan, and they couldn't figure it out. And so what's your opinion of Honolulu so far? Like, Yakuza is so ingrained as like walking around Japan that it's,
I know.
Like, are you finding it weird to be?
Well,
to
no, I mean, I've been to Hawaii a bunch of times, and it's kind of strangely making me nostalgic for those experiences of just being in Honolulu. Like, we went there. I proposed to my wife, in Honolulu on a Hawaii trip. Like, it's a very special place. Like, and I want to go back. I want to bring my kids there. And so walking around the streets, seeing the buildings and the names of things, kind of being reminded of, like, oh, this area is talking about Diamond Head, like the big mountain there you can climb up. Just seeing the beach, kind of running around the beaches and stuff like that. Just remembering all the good times of being in Hawaii, even as a kid. Like, we went a lot of times with my grandparents and stuff. So it's really fun to go back to that, to play a game in that setting, right? Like, I don't think there are too many games literally set in Hawaii. And it's just such a natural progression for the Yakuza games, because there is a similarity between a place like Honolulu in the Waikiki area and, the suburbs or the neighborhoods where previous Yakuza games and then Like a Dragon have taken place. Like, they kind of the way, like, all the shops and the restaurants and just everything to kind of see and take in and absorb. But yeah, the tropical setting is really a treat for sure. I'm loving just all the kind of freak rainstorms that pop up every like 5 or 10 minutes. It just starts pouring rain. But I love how populated it is. I love all the people just walking around, like all the tourists and even the kind of street performers. There's like one guy who like blows fire in the air, and he caught me on fire a couple times. I'm like, oh, really? I can't forget to like walk around him the other way, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I love just running into the people. Again, I've mentioning that we can just wave the hang loose and they become friends with you. And every time you see that person, you do the hang loose again, and then the friendship meter goes up. There's a lot of meters in this game, very RPG.
Oh, endless meters.
Right? Like you've got yeah. all these different characteristics for Ichiban, like his kindness, his intelligence, and all that stuff. Those go up.
Yeah.
You've got meters for your characters that bonding with each other, right? So those go up. There's the place where you go to like craft weapons. Like she's hilarious. Like every new mechanic and minigame has a side quest associated with it. And those are always delightful. Like they're always really fun. Like I don't know if you've done the one. There's one in the mall where you're doing like you're trying to like escape or like trying to doing like an obstacle course almost, where you're trying to avoid enemies in the mall while also like collecting points along the way. Like it's just so, again, every 30 minutes you're introduced to something totally new, and I feel like the area I'm in.
Did you find the certification the certification school?
I don't think so. I don't even know. I don't know.
Okay. So I guess I didn't see this character yet in the previous game, but I guess this guy, so there's this school, so you can get certificates for different topics, whatever. So,
oh, okay. I know what you're talking about from the previous game. I haven't encountered them here though.
It's the same guy.
Yeah.
And he's read. So I'm just walking down the street and he's like, I know that guy. And they explain like the connection from the previous game that, you know, he was doing this thing in Japan. And he's in Hawaii now because he had hit on the receptionist at his old school, gosh, and it didn't go well.
Yes.
So now he's here. And yeah, basically it's like, okay, so you could take these tests and then it like gives you these huge boosts to your...
That's right. Yes, I remember. Yes.
Yeah. So again, like the first one was free. So it was a 5-question quiz about Hawaii. So that's there's right, questions yeah. about like the what's the volcano that's here, and which one is the lay is a lay or like, so there was all these different questions. And so the first time I had actually only got 2 of the 5 right. So I failed, but it's this hilarious animation of, so he comes out of the test, right? And he's got this envelope and the results are in, and he pulls out the results. He puts them up in the air. Like he's like, you know, a JRPG character or whatever. And then it zooms in that it says he failed. And there's all these people around him that are ready to cheer for him.
Yeah,
and then and there's like this wah wah, and the character, so they're all like patting him on the back, like, don't worry about it. You know, the receptionist comes over. She's like, no, it's okay. You know, we won't charge you. You can keep trying or whatever.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah.
I'm glad you reminded me about that from the first game. I'm happy to see them back again. Another callback to the first game. You're kind of treated with that kind of stuff.
The tests are expensive though. Again, they're like $300 or $400 to take one.
Oh geez. Yeah. Well, I guess you got to go everywhere and get your freebies first. You know, come back later when your pockets are a little bit more.
It's the ultimate gotcha, where it's like your first taste is free, and come back when you got money. You know.
There's the dogs you encounter in the environment where you got to feed them a treat or feed them food, and then they'll become your friends. Like
it was a parrot that I found.
Okay,
I fed him a coconut.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Okay. Have you done any of the food crafting? Like, I've picked up all these food ingredients, but I've done no crafting in that way. The only thing of crafting I've done is the weapon stuff.
Yeah. No. I've gotten like herbs and coconuts.
Yeah. Me
and...
too. Yeah.
A few different things, but I haven't done the craft. It was funny. I was in a fight and I ended up having to eat the stuff because on my last, like, oh no, I need that extra 10 health.
I went to some shop somewhere and I just bought like one of everything. I might have even done that in Japan before leaving. I bought one of everything because I remember these games, they have a tendency to give you side quests where you have to bring somebody a bottle of sake or a bottle of some, you know, water or paper towel or tissues or something like that. So I try to keep one of everything. So I'm ready to go with the side quest. This game, I haven't encountered that as much. So I've just kind of, I've stockpiled all this equipment, and all these items. I'm like,
it's pretty cheap too.
They are. And it's been nice to have it. It's been nice to have it during the battles. Cause again, you got to keep Kasuga, you know, probably above 50% health just to be safe. Cause some, the guys with the guns, like the shotguns and stuff, pistols, they can put out a lot of damage. You got to be really careful about those guys.
So that's my only one beef with the combat is the perfect guard.
Mm, yeah.
Like I don't know. It's fine, but it's just like, I always find myself either forgetting to hit the button to try to guard or jumping the gun where I'm like, okay, is it going to hit me? I'll hit it now. Like I'm finding hitting the right point is always just a little bit off.
It's hard. I find you get into a rhythm with it. Like once you hit it a couple times in a battle, I found it easier to keep going with that, because you kind of recognize each weapon has its own kind of timing, right, that the enemies are doing or each attack they do, so you have to kind of really hone in on what it is. It's you got to go earlier rather than later, I think is the idea.
I think so.
The other thing is, you know what, it doesn't save you a lot of damage. It's maybe 10% or so. Like it'll go down from like 30 to 25. So it's not a ton. I think you're still going to take a fair bit of damage. I think they wanted to make it not, it's not like a Mario RPG or something like that, where it's the difference between, you know, 0 and 100.
Yeah. It's not, right? It's not as punitive.
No, not at all. I think it's just another thing to kind of keep you on your toes in battle. If you want to do it, if you get good at it, like great, but I don't think it's a be all end all, fortunately. So yeah, I think the timing is tough. I'll agree with you there. But I think it's fortunate that it's not a requirement of succeeding in combat, I would say.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh man, it's daunting trying to talk about this game because there's just so much going on.
And there's so much to come. Like I haven't really been exploring. Like I've been kind of just going from like the main quest or objective pink beacon on the map to the next one, and then I might do a little detour along the way. We haven't talked about the have you gotten the Segway scooter that you can ride?
Oh no, I need to get that.
Yeah, it's hilarious. So you do a side quest and you pick it up, and then you fight some guys and stuff like that, and then you have it the whole time. You can actually use it to not instantly but automatically go to your destination. And along the way, I was using the automatic one. I wasn't paying attention. I was on my phone or something. And I was driving. I guess I was riding past a car or guys, and the car stops and they get out and I got to fight them. happened like three times in a row. Like, I was going down the middle of a road and the cars were going the other way. And so I kept having to fight these guys on it. So the auto pathing, probably not the best option. You might want to control it yourself, but there's a battery on it. You got to charge. I think you can get new batteries for it too.
Oh man, I gotta find that.
But it's fun. It's fun to just ride it around. You go a little bit faster than just the running speed, which is nice.
Yeah. Well, the map is deceptively large. Like I'm looking at the map and I'm looking at it thinking, okay, that's not that far. But then when I run there, I'm like, that took a really long time.
Yeah, yeah. Running from point to point, everything's a little bit more spread out, you know, given this is America and not Japan, where everything's kind of closer together. It makes sense that you would have some device for getting around. And so the Segway has been nice for that.
Well, I've been taking a cab a lot because it doesn't take me 15 minutes to get over there.
That's why you don't have any money. You have no money left. You're blowing it all on taxis.
Yeah. I'm not walking all the way over there. It's like 20 minutes away.
I guess the nice thing is like the walking can be fun, right? Because there is so much to see and do. And if you know the path you're going to take, you can kind of see the objectives and the side quests along the way. So you can be like, hey, on my way, I'm going to stop at this like conversation point. I'm going to stop at this side quest. And you can kind of plan out your route and all the little kind of extracurricular stuff you want to do along the way, which is fun. And I'm going to start doing that in the next couple of chapters, I think.
Definitely dense. Like there's always stuff to do. It's like, you're not just walking through like empty streets or anything. Like there's always someone or someone to wave to, or, you know, some store to go into, or it's just packed.
And so what would happen is in other Yakuza games, the brawler ones in particular, like I would find myself like avoiding a lot of the combat just because, you know, it took a while or I wasn't very good at it. Like I wasn't good at like the parrying and the dodging and stuff necessarily. But this game, I really like it because like you level up, you get all your health back. obviously that's not a part of the other Yakuza games. Like, you need to have health items and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But also the fact that in the, I lost my train of thought here. The fact that the combat's pretty fast, like, it just doesn't take a long time. Like, I don't feel like it drags the experience down. If anything, it's more like a variety thing. Plus, you get all your points going up, you get the money you want to spend on things, right? So the combat, just a really excellent part of this game. Like, it doesn't detract at all. I think they've improved it. I think they've made an even stronger case for this series going turn-based, or for Ichiban to continue to have, like, his own kind of spin, this own Like a Dragon series. Yeah. And maybe they do a separate brawler one. Maybe it's the Judgment Line continues, or another Kiryu kind of character comes up. I don't know, but I sure hope they kind of keep iterating and doing what they're doing with these games.
Yeah. Well, yeah, definitely. It's kept my attention. I've been all over the place for the past few months of jumping from game to game. So it's,
oh yes,
yeah. It's definitely, you know, I'm coming home at the end of the day thinking, like, you know, ready to play. I want to see what happens to Kasugun next.
Yeah, me too. Like, the story, I think the story is compelling. The character relationships, again, they're growing on me. I finally got the fourth party member, so that's been fun. Having the full kind of complement, and it makes the kind of combat spaces a little bit more enclosed, because you have more friendly faces to hit enemies into, right? There's just more, I'm going to have more of my party members around the map, kind of wandering around a little bit, or around the combat space. So there's more opportunities for me to do, like, kind of follow-up attacks and stuff like that. So
yeah,
I think combat's going to be even more fun when you have the four party members. At least I've found that since they joined my party. So yeah, I can't wait to keep playing more of this game. I think about, you know, whether I'm going to platinum it or getting all the achievements. I don't know. I haven't even looked at the achievements. I don't care. I'm just kind of losing myself in the game. But I think Studio RGG has definitely jumped to the top of my, like, whatever they make, I'm probably going to play it. Like, it's a day one type studio for me now, I think.
Yeah, no, it's been great.
We've loved all the games of theirs we've played, yeah. Right? Like,
no complaints. There's nothing. They're just nailing it. You know, terrific game.
Yep, for sure. I think we'll probably call it here. David needs to hop off here and get to the end of chapter 4. He wants to stay up late. But we'll definitely do a follow up on this one in maybe a month or two, where we kind of give our final impressions and how we may do a spoiler cast kind of thing with how once more people have had a chance to go through the game as well and see how it ends up. I'm excited to play more. I'm not looking up anything. I'm not looking up how many chapters there are, what the achievements are. I'm going in as blind as I can. I didn't even really check out reviews other than just seeing the scores and the aggregate and stuff. But yeah, going through this game, it's a delight. It's going to be an awesome kind of kickoff. It already is an awesome beginning to 2024 in the AAA space. So eager to continue to play and see where it takes us.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that'll do us for this episode. Thanks, everybody, for joining us for an introduction to Infinite Wealth. If you haven't played the original Like a Dragon, you know, definitely go and do that. I think it is on Game Pass, and hopefully you can find a sale on that game. But it's worth playing for sure. And Infinite Wealth seems like, it's going to be a very, very worthy follow-up. You can join our Discord to chat about the game. We've got Thirsty Mage Discord links all over the place, including the Thirsty Mage website, thethirstymage.com. But yeah, you know, if you're on a particular podcast app that's maybe new, if you want to leave us a review there, we're on Spotify. You can leave us reviews and questions there. We would definitely welcome those as we start to plan out the rest of the year after these AAA games, once we get through these into March and stuff. We'd welcome that. Everyone, I hope you have a great evening, great week, and we'll see you next time on The Thirsty Mage. Bye for now.
Bye.